this is great. When I graduated first grade, all my father did was tell me to get a job. Hey, you want to feed that donkey some beer? Get it all messed up?
Maybe later.
I'll go put some beer in a bucket.
Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of East to West with Nick and Rob. My name is Rob.
And my name is Nick. Hey, Rob, want to feed that donkey some beer? Get it all messed up?
I don't know. Maybe later.
All right, I'll go get a bucket, fill it with some beer. We lost another legend. I can't handle it. I can't take it. That would hit me in the stomach.
Man, playing Marco Polo is never going to be the same again.
Marco!
Jeez, that was a great game.
Marco, it's a great game, man.
Marco Polo.
We can't wax too poetic. Norm Macdonald was a legend. He was my favorite weekend update anchor of all time. I loved him. I loved when he was emotional on Letterman. I loved when he constantly cussed on everybody's talk show. There was a line that I thought kind of summed it up by Bill Maher, I think a few days ago on Jimmy Kimmel, when he said of Norm Macdonald, he did the jokes he wanted to do. And that's what I always respected about Norm.
Yeah, he passed away from cancer. And basically, I remember him a while back when they interviewed him about it, about the cancer. And he said, well, if I die, the cancer loses.
Yeah.
So, post-mortem, he is the man.
He's close to my heart because, number one, he's a degenerate gambler, just like I am. He was a sports fan, which I loved. I loved his Sports Daily Show on Comedy Central. I can't believe that didn't work. And he's a cusser. And Lord knows, on E2W, all we do is fucking cuss.
But remember that discussion where we had where you said, I'll never have to follow Lennon again?
So we'll miss you forever, Norm. Rest in peace, sir.
Rest in peace.
What are we talking about today, Rob?
Well, Nick, we're going to talk about something near and dear to our hearts. We're talking about the British invasion.
Yeah, the second, or the third? The Spice Girls one? The good one. Okay, the good one.
The one that brought
us... Not Robbie Williams?
Oh, God, no. So there's a big six, obviously, that come out of the British invasion. We all know who they are. We're going to talk about the big six, actually. Songs that just made us forget about, like you said, off pod, like the Chubby Checkers and all the parody stuff that was coming out at that time.
There's a huge impact. It's not just the music that we got, which I think is maybe one of the most important things musically to ever happen in the last 100 years, Eat Your Heart Out, Mozart. But the impact on the culture altogether. I mean, you didn't just have the bands. You had Sean Connery show up as 007 in the films. You had the man from Uncle. It impacted everything. And when you look at it historically, obviously I wasn't around during that time, was it got us away from the crooners a little bit, which I know we love. We love all that stuff. We're not dogging anybody. I got us away from like those teenage sort of like melodrama songs, whatever you wanted to call that period. And it got us back to the acoustic guitar, the bass guitar, the drummer and the singer, the bands and that sound. I love the Everly Brothers as much as anybody, but what rock brought that sort of harmonizing, it obviously changed the world. So,
I mean, and it also had taken Britain out of a rut because it was like when a song came out in Britain, it was covered numerous times by numerous artists.
Absolutely.
And it kept hitting the charts, you know, kind of giving us a misconception of how popular a song was.
I must have 40 different versions by 40 of the most popular bands of all time singing Roll Over Beethoven by Chuck Berry. I mean, like, everybody was covering everybody. And there's some great stuff to come out of that. Once the Beatles came around and they really started pumping out those original songs, that's when things started to shift. And then people started experimenting. And that's where you get the huge dearth, this huge sort of bubble of sound that encompasses a lot of different things, including Tom Jones. He's technically part of the British invasions. I mean, it really wasn't just rock, but that's the stuff that we really remember.
Yeah, and a lot of the American influence in the British bands too. A lot of the blues, the Delta blues, a lot of the country music.
Oh yeah.
Really
Buddy Holly, Little Richard, obviously Elvis, Carl Perkins, Chuck Berry. I mean, we talked about it off pod a little bit, and it's worth mentioning just a little bit on the air. Why do they sound so American? We both mentioned that. We didn't know. Like, I didn't know Dusty Springfield was British for a long time, you know, until I heard her. I'm like, oh fuck, she's British? What the heck? You know, it's like finding out Superman is British, which sucks, by the way, but you know, it happens.
Did you say kryptonite?
you don't know it because what they're doing is emulating the sort of sound before, which was Chuck Berry, Carl Perkins, Little Richard. You know, they were rocking out to that. They were trying to sound American, and they were doing it better than we were, to be frank.
Yeah, and like I said, I didn't know that Donovan was British. I thought he was like a Southern California beach bum, all over his beatnik.
After Hurdy-Gurdy Man, I just always assumed he was the Zodiac Killer. Did I get that wrong?
It could have been, you know. So do you want to start off with anybody in particular?
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Well, I'm going to start off with these four lads from Liverpool because I think it's relevant. I hate to throw them out there right off the bat, but it's so important, Rob. As you talk about the history of the British invasion, there were a lot of things that led up to it. Obviously, we are both from New England. The Kennedy assassination was a massive piece. It was almost like the 9/11 before 9/11 happened. It was just a seminal moment in American history, and it kind of shifted things. That was November of 63, and there was the trickling of the British invasion. A little bit of Beatlemania was trickling over. You were starting to see it on magazines. There was a couple times where the Beatles actually made the air before that Ed Sullivan show on February 9th, 1964. But that night, she loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. You probably know better than me. Obviously, your dad, my grandfather, I think of him sitting on the couch watching the Ed Sullivan show in 64. And that was not a show that you would expect rock and roll to occur on. It was kind of a weird place for these four mop top kids to show up and start rocking out. But it really did sort of change the world. And they show up there. They do three tunes, All My Lovin'. Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. She Loves You, Until There Was You from The Music Man, a song I love. Until there was you. Yeah, I mean, we were just never the same after that. The Beatles are my favorite band of all time. I never really want to fight anybody about it. And they pumped out so many hits in the 64 to 68, 69 time period that, you know, they are Mozart. They are Beethoven. That's just what they are. I wish I was around in the 60s. I know, you know, a lot of things probably would have pulled my hair out about, but the music of that period is so incredible and it moves so fast. There were so many hits in such a short period of time. I just wish I could have got it live, you know, the 60s into the 70s. That period is so incredible. And I listen to that music, quite frankly, more than I listen to today's hits. So that tells you all you need to know right there.
Yeah. It's the music that you can listen to knowing that it's not going to be laced with a bunch of obscenities. It's good, well-constructed, beautiful music from the 60s.
Yeah. Almost like a robot made it, right? They're almost just perfect songs. You know what I mean? The perfect melody, the perfect harmonies. They mix all these things together and it's so simple and it's so clean. And when you listen to stuff now where there's just so many layers. You know, we watched the Mark Ronson documentary about the drum machine and all stuff. And some of that stuff is very good, don't get me wrong, but it's not the same as the acoustic guitar, the bass guitar, a little rhythm guitar, a drummer, and some harmonizing. If you got it, you got it. You know, if you got the goods, it's amazing.
Right. Now, I don't want to burst your bubble or anything, but the band I'm going to mention first is the band that knocked the Beatles off the charts in Britain and also the second band to appear on Ed Sullivan's show. The Dave Clark Five. Feeling glad all
over, inside my glad all over. I knew you were going to put them up there. And you know what? They had a healthy rivalry in England. Look, Glad All Over is a great song. They're not the Beatles, but yeah, they're very, very good.
They're not the Beatles, but the one very rare thing about this band is the Dave Clark Five. Dave Clark was the drummer.
Yeah. So you know I love that. I'm a Phil Collins guy.
Right. I am Spartacus. So, you know, that's how we go. He was the drummer and he was also the occasional lead vocalist for the band as well. Kind of like the Eagles back in the day.
Don Henley.
With Don Henley. Did a lot of the vocals, and a lot of people did not know that Don Henley was also the drummer of the Eagles.
You know, I'll just tangent here just for a quick moment. There is a documentary floating around called Count Me In on Netflix, and it is about drummers, and there are quite a few drummers that show up on that. The rhythm of the drum sets the tone for everything, really, and it doesn't surprise me, having watched that, how many of the writers and how many, like, I used to be surprised, like, how did the drummer end up being the lead singer, or what's the story with Don Henley or Phil Collins? It's kind of a weird thing, but they understand the construction of the song because it all starts with that bump, 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 bump. Right. count me in, let's get it going, you know? And it's pretty cool to see that.
Now, the Beatles are known as a mercy beat. Now, it's the style of music that came from across the pond, basically mostly out of Liverpool. But Dave Clark 5 was more of a abruptive, loud, forceful sound. And that was driven by Clark's, not excellent drumming, but more of his punchy drumming style. And they also had like saxophone in this band.
You know, I love the saxophone.
Very well put together band. They all sang in the band and they were just a great foil to the Beatles.
What was your favorite Dave Clark 5 song? Is it Glad All Over or? Well,
they do a version of a song called Over and Over. They also did Get Together.
Get Together is a good tune. Yeah.
What they did was they took and they mashed the song up, those two songs, and they made the song called Everybody Get Together, which is the version of the Dave Clark 5 song that you would probably hear on the radio today.
You mentioned I Am Spartacus. It was, and I vaguely remember as we get close to the October Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony, it was Tom Hanks that put the Dave Clark 5 in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Years after he did That Thing You Do, I can't remember exactly how far apart they were, but I think it was loosely inspired, That Thing You Do, right? That's kind of it.
Pretty much, yeah. That's a movie everybody should watch if they love music.
It's a love letter. It's a love letter to the classic rock band, you know, probably of the 60s there.
And everybody knows, like you said, the drummer is the backbeat of every band, and the bass player is their sidekick.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, when everybody loses their place because they're messed up on drugs and running around the stage and Mick Jagger's doing all the hip moves, you go back to the bass player and the drummer to see where you are in the song. Oh, wait, where are we at? Okay, this is where we're at.
Yeah, bring them right back to life.
Bring them right back in, yep.
So, what do you have next?
So, look, I'm going to stay with the big boys because I could go off map and there's so many bands that I love that come out of the British Invasion. I know you're going to mention a couple of them, so I'll hold back. But you can't mention the Beatles without mentioning their direct foil. They're Yankees to the Red Sox, the Rolling Stones.
He will stop and look around. Here he comes.
You know, we just had somebody pass away, had been around forever. He always looked old to me. I thought he was going to live forever. It's crazy he's gone. I can't believe Keith Richards outlived him. It's shocking in my brain. I haven't squared that yet. But they are so good. I remember when I first fell in love with the Beatles as a kid, even then, we're talking like the late 80s, early 90s, I had to not like the Rolling Stones while I was falling in love with the Beatles. I had to wait. And then when I finally made peace with the Beatles, I'm like, I can like both at the same time. Now I can like the Rolling Stones, you know, and then I explore that. All of a sudden it's Painted Black. It's the 19th Nervous Breakdown, one of their early hits, Not Fade Away. Inspired by the same people, Carl Perkins, Buddy Holly. You can hear it direct, Muddy Waters. I mean, they have a very soulful sound that's very, very clear. And Mick Jagger, it's just written all over them. I love the Rolling Stones and I find myself revisiting them for like a month. You know, it's usually like the fall time is my Stones time. And I just rock out a bunch of Stones music for a month and I take a break from my Beatles.
The Stones, man, just a great band. You know, the early tragedy in the band as well during the British Invasion. They did lose
Brian Jones. Yeah, Brian Jones, incredible. Obviously, a gifted guitar player and songwriter on the early albums. And obviously, things didn't go right. They were breaking up to begin with there. But yep, tragedy struck.
And when you think about it, a lot of British acts do lose like their guitar player, but are immediately replaced with someone who is, if not on the same level, but is far superior.
Even the Beatles with Pete Best, when you think about it, they had a little bit of that as well. I mean, life is about choices. You know what I mean? You're going to come on the train or not, you know? Charlie Watts, though, I think he doesn't always get his due with some of the other drummers of that time period. He was incredible. And that sound is distinctive.
He never had a facial expression other than his mouth was closed and he kind of looked like he was like, eh.
He always looked 65, Rob. He fucking always looked like that his whole life.
But he just looked like he just didn't care. He was like,
he really
I'm
did.
Just doing
yeah.
my job.
He was like the J.D. Drew of drummers. I don't even like baseball. I'm just out here.
I just punch my ticket, get my check, and go home.
And when you're surrounded by Keith Richards and Mick Jagger and Roddy Wood and obviously early Brian Jones, it's weird, right? He's just like this consummate professional in the background.
Right, exactly. He's the guy, the drummer. You know, we're all going to go back to the drummer on a lot of these bands.
All right, who do you got next, Rob?
I have a band that I have loved forever, The Animals.
I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Now, oh, they're so good. Yeah. Good
one. Animals had such a large catalog of songs. Big, huge song, House of the Rising Sun.
So good. Been covered a million times.
Right. Doesn't matter who covers it, when it was covered, does not compare to this original version of this song. There are versions I like of it, but it just doesn't compare to the one and only one.
I'll say it over and over again, and I'll try not to repeat myself. Imagine hearing that for the first time. You know what I mean? You're used to listening to Frank Sinatra, and then all of a sudden House of the Rising Sun comes on. It had to have blown your brain up.
It did. I mean, they used like that organ sound back then too. You know, one of the few first bands to incorporate an organ into their sound as a rock band. I mean, when you list their catalog also, they have We Gotta Get Out of This Place.
So it's such a good tune, yeah.
It's My Life, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, another great song.
Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. And there's so much power and soul in like the way they performed, basically. You know what I mean? The energy was slow and creepy in a way, but you could feel it, you know, in your bones when they sang.
And their vocalist, Eric Burdon, I mean, he had that deep, deep voice to sing, so soulful, so bluesy. And later on in his career, you know, he was with the Animals for a while, but later on in his career, he actually joined another band called War. And, yeah. You know,
they had a short run, but a pretty impactful one.
Short run, but you know his vocals. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Back in the day, I guess he was the vocal hitman you would hire if you needed a vocalist for your band. You know, yeah, that's the guy you get.
Yeah, distinct sounds.
Exactly. And they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1994. So at least, you know, they get it right back then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're getting further away from that. Though I'm looking forward to this year, of course.
I am looking forward to it. We'll see what happens. Who's your next one?
Okay, so
who is your next one? Who is it,
who
Nick?
Who are they?
Who? Wow, that rip.
Look, you talk about drummers, right? You can't talk about fucking impactful drummers without talking about Keith Moon, one of the craziest effers of all time. Lived 100 miles an hour his whole life. Just insanity. I would argue the heart and soul of that band, although I'm sure people would yell at me for that. The Who is incredible. Their sound is amazing. Can't explain. I bring it slow. I mentioned that like I had to work my way off the Beatles before I could enjoy the Rolling Stones. Mm-hmm. The Who were off to the side. They were a little bit late on the British invasion for one. 64, 65, you know, really that's when they start to take off. My generation and Can't Explain are 65. They have a sound that I don't correlate with the other ones. I don't like put them in a bucket with the Rolling Stones or the Beatles. I almost think there's something else. You know what I mean? They're like Pink Floyd. They're off to the side somewhere because exactly. Their sound is so weird and so incredible. But I love them. And I was a Tommy fan growing up, you know that. I probably made my stepdad so mad listening to that album 500 times in a row. I'm a sensation. But I love that band. They are absolutely part of the late side of the British invasion. They are one of the seminal bands to come out of that, and they stand the test of time. Please listen to them today as soon as this podcast ends. They're incredible.
Any stadium that you go into in the United Kingdom or in the United States, and you hear that distinctive organ sound,
oh yeah,
you know something great's about to happen. And then you start hearing the Teenage Wasteland. I know that's later on in their career.
Yeah, a little bit later, yeah.
The Who are basically the band that brought you stadium rock.
We mentioned House of the Rising Sun when you think of, yeah, they really did. Queen is there's a direct line there. You think about My Generation, the first time you heard that song, they are just kicking it to the old folks there with the three-piece suits, you know? They're just right in their face, no shame at all. Pete Townsend, Roger Daltrey, obviously Keith Moon, John Entwistle, right? And Daltrey, too, was a percussion guy.
Yeah.
So he wasn't necessarily a drummer per se, but he was definitely percussion in the beat. Again, all the pieces put together to make this crazy, distinctive, incredible sound.
And he kept duct tape in business for a long time with that microphone string.
Yeah, right. Who was a better front man for my big three? Obviously, the Beatles, when you get to John Lennon, he never really stood out like the front man because it was such an ensemble. But if you had to pick between Jagger and Daltrey, I think there's a moment where Daltrey wins the day for a little while.
I think there is too. Jagger, you knew you were going to get the dancing and the preening.
Early
the
Jagger creeped me the fuck out. Like my first introduction, who the fuck is this guy?
Right.
He weighs like 40 pounds soaking wet and he's just like a snake up there doing weird stuff. I was creeped out.
Exactly. The elephant in the room is the drummer of The Who inspired another drummer. The drummer from Dr. Teeth in Electric Mayhem, Animal from the Muppets, was based on...
Rightfully so. By the way, Animal, the Muppets have a couple of good hits. It was a cultural phenomenon, basically, and the impact goes so much more beyond music. We go back to our iPods, our phones, our playlists, or Spotify, whatever, and we hear the tunes, but this really changed the direction of America, changed culture, and put it in a way that made a lot of people mad, by the way. People were like, I just want more fucking Frank Sinatra, you know? They were really upset about this. And that's why it's such a big impact. It's not just music. It's never just music. We're changing the world here.
Wow. The Who, big, one of my favorites also. Now, the next band I'm going to mention is near and dear to your heart, especially Mrs. The Greek's heart. I don't mean to steal your thunder, but I do know a lot about this
band. I was so pissed you picked them because I thought I was going to get them. I was like, nobody wants to do this band. No way.
I do know a lot about this band. So
they're so good.
The Zombies. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked, the way she had said the color of her hair. They were formed back in the early 60s.
Yeah, 61-ish. They're very early.
And of course, one of their songs was called Tell Her No. Tell her no, no. They also did Time of the Season.
Time of the Season, an all-timer, Rob.
But their biggest song, their best song, a wedding staple song, She's Not There.
It's so good.
One of the greatest songs ever written. The thing about this song is that it was written by, you know, not the lead guy in the band, but it was written by the keyboardist and the vocalist in the band, Rod Argent. Okay. The lead vocalist mostly in the Zombies was Colin Blunstone, but Rod Argent was the guy that wrote this song.
Maybe too many people put them in the bucket of like the psychedelic sound or the trippy sort of pop.
Yeah.
I think they're so much more sophisticated than that. When you go back to those albums, so much more sophisticated than just that.
They were. And, you know, like I said, great catalog. Now, if you recall, Rod Argent, pretty much one of the only people in the band that actually went off and did, I would say, a solo tour.
Yeah.
And he had the big song, Hold Your Head Up.
Which is a good tune.
It's a good tune. But if you listen to from the Zombies and how they sounded to when he did his Hold Your Head Up, you can still see the influence, but he got progressively hotter as it went along.
Yes.
So the Zombies, a great band, started recording all their original stuff back in 65, 66. So they kind of like were the middle to the end of the British invasion coming in. But it's a great addition to the original first wave of the British invasion bands. Oh, no question
about it. Yeah. You have the Beatles coming. We have some solo artists mixed in there with Tom Jones, Dusty Springfield, etc. They start out by it's all this American influence, all that Carl Perkins, all that Little Richard, all that Buddy Holly, all that Elvis. And then they start influencing each other and they start one-upping each other. All of a sudden you get the Beach Boys using a Mellotron and all this like weird stuff is going on. Oh, the Beatles did that? Now I got to do something, you know? And through that, those rivalries, through that competition, you just get some of the most incredible music ever made.
Right. Who are the lucky people? We are, for getting to listen to all that creative juice just flowing back in the 60s, from Britain to California.
No question about it. I know we have to rap, but obviously the Hollies, an incredible band.
Yep.
Herman's Hermits. It's hard to say. Well, the Searchers. The Searchers are a great band. I have them on my iPod. I found them later in life. And the Yardbirds, early Eric Clapton, he left early. But they had a nice run there too, the Yardbirds. They were incredible.
Right. And there was like Jerry and the Pacemakers. Petula Clark.
Technically the Kinks.
Yeah.
I mean, they are included in there and what a distinctive sound they have also.
Petula Clark came out of this era too, you know, downtown.
Incredible. Yeah. Tom Jones. My fucking mom loves Tom Jones. Your sister jumps up and down for Tom Jones. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan, but fine.
Why, Delilah?
And Dusty Springfield, who, by the way, I mean, when she comes on my shuffle and you just hear her distinct, incredible voice, I only want to be with you. You don't have to say you love me. You don't have to say you love me.
Hugest of her songs.
Oh my God, Son of a Preacher Man. Yeah, I mean, so distinct, so good. When they gather around and started talking, Cousin Billy would take me walking. And again, I swear I didn't know she was British until I was probably like 40.
So last year.
Yeah.
Back at previous pod, we had talked about great soundtracks. And I believe we had mentioned.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah.
You know, Pulp Fiction soundtrack. Because every song that Quentin Tarantino picked, especially Dusty Springfield's Son of a Preacher Man, just fit perfectly well into the movie. Good.
There are directors, and not just directors, producers and executive producers as well. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, I am at heart a movie guy before I am a football football, baseball, or a music guy, to be honest with you. And when you can understand multiple things at the same time, Quentin Tarantino knows what he's talking about when he goes back into history. He knows the important soundtrack of those years. And if you mix that together with a good cinematography, really good set design, and amazing actors, it's incredible to see it all come together. And Pulp Fiction is one of those things where he just plays with different timelines and different eras, and it's so, so good.
Another guy who's great at picking songs for his movies is Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler always picks great songs for his
movies. He's a musical guy at heart. Remember, he did a rough cut of like Real Love, I think, for Funny People. And obviously, he's good. He was musical on SNL. Obviously, he's got the Hanukkah song. Yeah, these guys all want to be rock stars. All rock stars want to be comedians, and all comedians want to be rock stars. All movie stars want to be rock stars. That's just kind of how it goes. But like I said, I think when you can't have like a season of Mad Men without a Dusty Springfield song, was my point. And all these British invasion bands mark the time. You know, the James Earl Jones commercial for baseball marking the time for society. The British invasion marks the time for society too. It's so important to that era.
And we called this the first British invasion because we're going to hope to try to do another episode covering...
So tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
That's not the second invasion.
Sorry, I jumped the gun.
Well, it kind of is. It's
kind of
the end of it.
Yeah, that's
true. Heavy metal.
Yeah,
and then
that's true.
Towards the end of it is when all the love pop, the blue-eyed soul and all that from Britain came in. Hopefully we can get to one of those down the line. Like, we have a whole bunch of sequel episodes that we need to record coming forward, so we got to keep the fans
I would argue that you could do it in four parts, really, because the last wave of the British invasion is probably like the Adele, Tasha Bedenfield, Amy Winehouse time, and that's in and of itself pretty incredible. Then you have sort of like the Aussie time period, your hair bands and stuff, and then the in-between one is, hey, the Spice Girls, Oasis, Robbie Williams, a couple of boy bands in there, they had
further.
A moment.
Yeah. Go back a little further, and we got Culture Club, we got ABC.
Culture Club,
ABC.
Right, you have an 80s era and a 90s era, technically.
Yes, Thompson Twins from the 80s too, all huge stuff, big sound.
There's sort of music as counterculture, and then we sort of label stuff when it's all said and done. So like power pop, like I would really take umbrage if you called that Spice Girls, Oasis, Robbie Williams time, like just pop. It's really more than that. They were more sophisticated than that, even though we kind of can laugh at it a little bit.
It's all music to me, Nick. It's all music.
Yeah, exactly.
If it makes you smile, if it makes you tap your feet, if it makes a white guy dance badly, it's music.
Definitely, I'm definitely doing that. All right, so that'll conclude British Invasion Part 1. That was a lot of fun, Rob.
That was a lot of fun. And you know what? We have to pay for this segment. So let's hear from a few words from our sponsor.
Anchor.
Who'd you rather bone? Meg Ryan or Jack Nicholson?
Jack Nicholson now or 1974?
74.
Meg Ryan.
And we are back.
What are we talking about next, Rob?
Well, Nick, I'm have myself a nice cold and frosty one. Let's talk some bubbles.
Daddy soda bubble time. Here we go. Pop 'em.
Oh, ginger ale, ginger pop, ginger beer, beer bubbles, bubble aid, bubble cola, double bubble burpa-cola, and all the crazy carbonated stuff that tickles your nose.
All right, Rob, your favorite sport, baseball. We're going to open with the good stuff. Are you ready?
Yep, let's get it over with.
All right, listen, I said it on the last episode, and I got a little flack from it, so thank you, Twitterverse. The Red Sox, I still believe they are hanging on by such a thin line, but they are hanging on. Matt Barnes is back. JD Martinez is getting hot. Rafael Devers is on the leaderboard for RBIs. Chris Sale, he did get the vid, but he's back now. He looked okay. The Yankees are playing awful, which is really, really helping us out. Now we're fighting off Toronto, Oakland, Seattle, and obviously the Yankees. What do you think, Rob? What are the chances we're going to get a wild card home game?
Well, Nick, there is a thin line between clever and the wild card.
Is it stupid?
If they could pull it off, it would be the greatest comeback in sports history.
It'd be the greatest wild card game of all time.
I love lists.
I love lists, Rob. This is great. Let me ask you the question, because I know we're going to talk about Mac Jones at some point, but what is the vibe of the city? Does the city care about this team? They're kind of a fun team.
We're in Boston. Of course they care about the sports here.
Yo, kid, you check that Sox game last night?
Who the fuck are these guys? Garrett Whitlock should be the closer. Matt Barnes should set him up, but listen, Alex Cora, do your your thing. If you're not watching the Red Sox, please start watching them. So listen, I just want to mention on the website, nickandrobetw.com, my baseball prediction article, if you go back to it, fuck man, I wasn't really that far off. We're looking pretty good here. Obviously, we have the playoffs to go, but it's a lot of fun. This baseball season is incredible. I will mention that, look, I don't like them. They're in our division, and I hate to give them any props, but the Tampa Bay Rays, it's hard to watch a team that is fun, young, talented, fundamentally sound, have nobody in the stands. It's kind of embarrassing. That's a good team that's playing their heart out right now. And even though I don't want them to do well, I'm a Red Sox fan. Go to those fucking games, people in Tampa. You're not vaccinated anyway. It's a crazy state to begin with. Go to a fucking baseball game and support that team. They're playing their hearts out right now.
Let's go over your article, Nick. Let's go real time versus your article. I think you're a little bit off with the AL Central.
The AL Central's the White Sox.
Let's see. You have the Twins and the White Sox.
Oh, I did have the Twins. Yeah, the Twins. Yeah. The Twins had a terrible season.
Yeah, but you're on the West Coast, which is mostly National League.
I watch my Red Sox and then I go to dinner. I don't give a fuck what the Dodgers do. I'm not NL guy, Rob. I'm an AL guy. It's Giants, Brew Crew, Braves, and then the wild card right now is the Dodgers and St. Louis, but San Diego, Cincy are right on the outside looking in. So really, I'm not that far off.
Huh. So you have the AL wild cards as the Angels and the White Sox.
Yes. Now, the White Sox are making the playoffs. The Angels, I'm going to say this as gently as I can because I have already ranted on this many times on the pod. They should have supported Ohtani. I know they lost Mike Trout. That team could have done stuff at the trade deadline, chose not to. They were playing pretty fucking good baseball, and those owners just turned their backs on them, which is a travesty, by the way.
The hell with it.
Watch some more Angel baseball this year than probably any time in my life.
I know you're a huge Ohtani fan, and I understand that. I mean, I'm a fan of his too. However, his pitching is not what's getting him the headlines. It's his hitting.
I agree.
So I think it's time to sit him down and say, we'll let you pitch like once a month, mate, but we want that bat for 150 lease games a year.
So it's a discussion that I think will go on as long as Joe Maddon lets him continue to start, right? Now, he had about 100 really good innings. Now, he has tapered off recent, right? And since the All-Star break and the Home Run Derby, this was his coming out season. It's a lot of pressure on him. He played a lot of games, double switches. Joe Maddon would leave him in the game a lot because they wanted him to bat second. So he gets a lot of at-bats, right? He's got 44 home runs and he's got 7 wins, I think. And he struggled the last couple times out. I wanted him to get to 10 wins. My question for you, Rob, is I love what he's done and I think he's clearly the MVP, but I will listen to the argument for Vladdy Jr., who's batting .318, leading the American League, who's got 46 home runs to Ohtani's 44, and he's got 174 hits for Vladdy Jr., and he's 5th, I think, in RBIs with 104, just below Rafi Devers. Is Vladdy Jr. the MVP over Ohtani because they're kind of in the playoff race? If it's me, I still give it to Ohtani, but at least I can understand that argument. He's an eyelash away from a triple crown.
Okay, Vladdy Jr., when he was a rookie, a lot of hype came out on him. And
he started kind of slow. I remember. Right. I was like, this guy's too wild. Slow.
He has brought it all together. As far as an MVP, it's all going to depend on what his team does. I honestly think that the MVP should be based on how your team does and not just an individual player.
And I've never asked you this. Story. All the years we've known each other, I've never asked you the question because Mike Trout has got an MVP or two with a crappy team because the Angels never support their team, by the way. But are you somebody who says the MVP has to be on a winning team? Is that a prereq?
I think it should be.
Yeah, I'm not sure anymore. I've kind of gotten nerdy with the stats, and I think I'm 50-50.
How can you be the most valuable player in a team that didn't go anywhere? How valuable were you to that team?
The honest truth here in the Ohtani versus Vladdy Jr. discussion is basically Ohtani is Vladdy Jr. minus 5% if Vladdy Jr. pitched 100 innings. That's basically what he is. How can you not give him the MVP would be my argument. You've never seen it. You may never see it again. They may take your advice next year and just not pitch him, or maybe just pitch him a little bit. I think that would be travesty and bad for baseball. I think as long as he's healthy, let him go out there and do it. He's setting an example for future generations, honestly. But I do understand the argument that the Blue Jays are good. I'm going to tell you right now, as a degenerate Norm McDonald better type here in Vegas,
$6,000.
I'm always a year early on these teams. I bet the Blue Jays this year on the future for the World Series. I do not think they have the firepower this year to do it. I could be wrong. But next year, as soon as this baseball season ends, no matter who's crowned champion, jump on the Blue Jays next year because the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Rays are in trouble. That team's really good.
Okay. The Blue Jays need a couple of things done. They need to change that stadium that they're in because that stadium is so outdated and ugly.
Yeah. Not as bad as Tampa, but it's awful.
Honestly, I would like to see the Blue Jays cross the border and play out of Buffalo.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say Vegas. I was going to get excited. I'd allow it. Yep. I'll allow it.
You know what, Rob? I'll allow it.
Oh, I was waiting for one of those. I could drink now.
Yeah, let's take a sip. Shout out to America. You're welcome.
All right. So you picked the wild cards once again as the Angels and the White Sox for the American
League. Not that
bad.
Yeah, I can't bet 100%, Rob. Come on, it's baseball.
National League, you picked the Dodgers and the Braves.
The Braves are the NL East. They have almost clinched that division. And the Dodgers are the wild card leader. So they're both in the playoffs.
Right. And as soon as Acuna gets back, if he does come back this year.
If he gets back, yeah.
That's going to be one tough team to beat.
The Braves are very good. They got Ian Anderson back. I do think they're a starter short, and Will Smith has been a little shaky, their closer, but that's a fun team to watch too. Ozzie Albies, he signed that Dustin Pedroia contract for a second baseman. Remember, Dustin Pedroia got on it early and signed a very reasonable deal. Now, ultimately, he had to retire and they had to pay it out. There was some controversy toward the end of that. Ozzie Albies is on a very reasonable contract, and he is killing it this year. He's really an MVP candidate. So is Austin Riley. Acuna, you mentioned the injury. They are loaded at that team with young talent.
Ozzie Albies, you mentioned him. Double secret probation version of stock up on him.
Stock up. Oh, stock up Albies. I like it.
You picked the two teams to be in the World Series as the White Sox.
I like them.
Okay. And Slam Diego.
Now, Slam Diego has had some injuries. That's number one. Fernando Tatis in and out of the lineup, along with some COVID problems as well for that team. The San Diego run differential is plus 48, whereas the Dodgers is like plus 200. The Giants, for some crazy reason, are plus 182. They're not as good as I thought they were going to be. I think I maybe was a year early on San Diego, but they're only a game and a half out of the wild card. Don't sleep on them. They could jump over St. Louis. They could still get in and make a run. I don't think they have the starters to do it, but they are fun to watch.
I think overall, you did have a great prediction. Batting average, I'd say you're batting about, I don't know, 350, which is a good batting average.
Good night, San Diego. Go fuck yourself.
Holy cow!
So let's talk in the moment. We've gone through baseball. Let's talk in the moment. It was the
you
first wanna,
I know you want to talk about it. Week one, we have real live football. I watched so much fucking football by like 4 p.m. West Coast on Sunday, my brain was coming out of my nose.
That's what Red Zone is for, man. Don't bother watching and flipping a whole game.
He's too good. I just think that Andrew Siciliano has maybe the hardest job in sports. People can gush over Tony Romo or whatever the fuck. That's the fucking guy that's the voice of football right now.
Week one NFL. Of course, there was lots of great games. The Chiefs and the Browns. That was a great game. A lot of Chiefs fans were like ready to shit bricks.
I would say that, look, the Browns, it's a loss, and the loss is what matters. You are what your record is, correct? Yes, they didn't win the game, but man, there were some encouraging signs. The one downside to that game, and I know you are a Baker fan, when they're down and he has to stay in the pocket and throw downfield, I still have questions. I think they have to be up, and that's their rub.
At that point when he did that, I was thinking they should have a few more runs to Chubb.
Yeah, play action.
So the biggest game of the week as far as, holy shit, I can't believe that happened. Saints and the Packers.
Listen, I called it a little bit. I don't want to get too crazy here, but I was Team Jameis 3 years ago. He had some growing up to do, and I bet the Saints. You know that. I bet him on the future for the NFC, and I bet him for the Super Bowl. Now, they may not be that good. Obviously, some of those future bets are designed to hedge against as the season goes on, but Jameis looked good. They didn't let him throw downfield too much, but obviously, you saw the arm talent. Their defense is young, aggressive, hungry. They play with a lot of fire.
They do. I was actually surprised. He had 5 touchdowns and about, I think, 145 passing yards.
Less than 200 yards. Yeah, I don't exactly remember what the number is, but the question on my mind is, because you know I can't go a whole episode without talking shit about him, your buddy, the almost host of Jeopardy, didn't do the R-E-L-A-X relax line, but he basically said it's one game, calm down, people. He looked like fucking shit. They really looked like they didn't want to be there. And even in the second half, I'm like, okay, look, there'll be some signs of life here. Nope, not really. They didn't really do anything.
Okay. He said it best during a post-game interview. I think he's done. I honestly think he wants to retire.
Why didn't he retire before the season started then, Rob?
Because he still had a season under contract.
He's JD Drew. I don't think he likes the game, and I think it's kind of obvious.
You know what his line was that he said?
What did he say?
You drafted my replacement. Why don't you just play him?
Oh, man, that's tough. Yeah.
Don't forget, he went through the same thing, too, when he got drafted and had to wait 3 years for Brett Favre to get the fuck out of there.
He's not the only one who had to go through that. Lots of people had to go through that. So I'm supposed to feel bad for Aaron Rodgers, because I don't. If he didn't want to play, then he shouldn't have played, and he shouldn't hijack his team by showing up and sort of just like lazy easily going through a football game. I told you on the last episode, when you watch preseason, it was shaky. You know what I mean?
You never know. He could come back. He could go.
Yeah, I don't think they're
16
done.
16-1 now.
I agree. I don't. It's not that I think they're done. I just think that he doesn't like to play, and it's going to be a weird season for all Packer fans.
I kind of think that that game was an FU to everybody. That's what it was. That was an FU to everybody.
Yeah, it was a little bit of that. Yep, for sure. What about Raiders Ravens? Because that was a fun Monday night game.
Oh, that was a good game. Beautiful stadium you guys have there.
Isn't it lovely? It looks great on TV. I've always said that. I was weirded out when I left work on Monday afternoon. You text me, you said, how's the traffic? And I'm like, there's no traffic in Vegas. And then I pulled out of work and I was like, holy shit, there's traffic. Felt like a real city. It's kind of weird.
Welcome to Boston. Now, what about the Niners and the Lions?
So the Niners and Kyle Shanahan do look good. I was impressed that Trey Lance got out there a little bit. This guy, Elijah Mitchell, shows up. They benched Trey Sermon, basically. He got the whole game off. And Mostert blows his ACL. They don't lose a beat over there. They look pretty impressive. Brandon Ayuk didn't even do much. Jimmy G was okay. The defense is feisty. They're expertly coached in terms of time management, which I appreciate. But I don't think that they're going to like go 14-3 or whatever. I think they're more like an 11-6-ish kind of team.
Yeah, it's going to be weird trying to get used to the 17-game schedule.
Yeah, it is weird. I do think Jimmy G, let me ask you, based on one game, obviously we don't know much, but I think Jimmy G's going to hold that job all year, honestly.
I think he will. You know, the only thing that's going to knock him down is an injury. I mean, that's yeah. I don't think the 49ers defense is that great. I mean, they still gave up 33 points. So
I think what happens is like when they let their foot off the gas pedal, it's like prevent defense and teams just go nuts. Now, fantasy wise, for those folks who play fantasy football, garbage points matter just as much as anything else.
Deshaun Watson, I don't think we're going to see him play at all this year. I honestly do not.
Yep, I'll be mum on that one, but I don't think we're going to see him either, and that's probably the right thing. So
the Jets.
Because I knew we wasn't going to win a damn thing with the New York Jets.
Okay, well, here's what I would say to the Jets fans. You know, I don't need to be nice to them, so I could just say they suck as always, because they definitely do. Both their lines are bad. What I would tell them is that I think they actually do have a quarterback. Now, do they have anything else besides that? Not really. But I do think Zach Wilson's going to put some points up. You're going to get some garbage points there. Remains to be seen on some of the Elijah Moore, I think, is the receiver they drafted. Michael Carter, the running back. I don't know how those pieces fit together, but I do think Wilson looks like an NFL quarterback more so than Sam Darnold did.
As long as they protect him, he'll be an NFL quarterback.
He was getting rid of the ball pretty quickly, so he was protecting himself a little bit, which I thought was smart.
The other team taunting them with, you know, holding up pictures of his mom didn't help either.
That was me. I was holding up pictures.
That was you? Oh.
That was me, yeah. I think Carolina, actually, just to mention it, I think they're good. Sam Darnold is pretty good. And that Carolina team, McCaffrey stayed healthy for one game anyway. I kind of like that team. I don't know how good they are. The flip side of that is in their same division, the Falcons. I believed in the Eagles and I like Jalen Hurts. I think I had mentioned that before. But I thought the Falcons would come out with a little more fire. Pitts is a rookie. I know we can't expect a ton. And they did lose Julio Jones, but they looked really stale in Atlanta.
Yeah, they looked like they showed up to not pull out a play.
Who are you more excited about? Are you more excited about Kyler Murray, or are you more excited about your buddy Joe Burrows, who edged one out against the Vikings?
I still like Joe Burrows. I will stick by my statement on
you
him.
Might be right. I was sure you were wrong about that, but now I'm getting nervous.
The kid likes to win.
This guy, Mac Jones, I watched just about all the game. I only flipped away from the Patriot game a little bit. Two things I learned. He is a cool customer in the pocket. He can move well, and he's very accurate, but I don't know that the Patriots are a playoff team this year. And I think that the Dolphins are good. My hot take out of this is that watch out for the Dolphins. That is a team that is not as bad as they were last year. They started good and they sort of fizzled out as time went on. Even with Tua, which I wasn't that impressed with, I think that Dolphins team is legit. They could be a sneaky winner.
They could be, but somehow, some way, the Dolphins always figure out a way to lose.
Yeah.
As far as the weather in New England with Mac Jones, everybody's pretty happy about him.
I like him a lot. Now, the secondary, I have questions.
Yeah, the secondary.
Jason McCourty on the Dolphins was hard to watch.
It always seems to be the way, though. Guys go to other teams when they know they're going to be playing their former team, like first or second game of the year.
We know with Flores. I mean, we're stealing secrets in the AFC East.
There. I'm pretty sure he's got some, like, you know, camera in Belichick's refrigerator or something.
Not even going to touch that one. We're going to let that one go.
He's got it on,
but I do think the Dolphins
rings.
Are good. I wasn't even that impressed with Tua, and I don't think Miles Gaskin's that good, but I was impressed by Jalen Waddle, who was a rookie standout that I mentioned on the fantasy episode. And I thought Devontae Parker Tucker also look good. I just like the makeup of that team. They're another team that understands game management, time management, and they're going to be tough to beat. So we got to play them one more time. We got to play the Bills two more times. I'm getting a little nervous with the Patriots. You tell me 9-10. I'm saying, yeah, it sounds about right.
I'm good with that. I say they win between 9 and 10 games.
Yeah, and I think I'd be happy with that too. Like Nelson Aguilar, he fucking fits right in.
Yeah, he's a gamer. And of course, we also skipped over the first game of the season.
Yeah, what do you want to talk about? The GOAT? The great one?
Yeah,
the GOAT. What's there to talk about?
Once again, I'm saying it on the pod. Once again, a kicker has to bail out Brady.
Oh, here we go. Not even going to entertain that.
We've got to answer the bell. Now let's go.
The floor is lava with Gronkowski.
Admit it.
He looked great. Come on. That was incredible. The guy is fucking.
If the kicker misses, Brady loses.
The Tom Brady story or whatever it's called comes out on ESPN Plus. I'll make sure I send that to you every day on the hour.
I have no problem with it. I'm just stating the fact.
All right, Beantown. Settle down. I'm not smoking, Mac.
Come on.
The Cowboys have a bad defense. That's what I learned from that game. Tom Brady's still the GOAT, and the Cowboys have a bad defense. We're in a sweet spot of sports. Baseball and football are intersecting, and it's a lot of fun to have stuff to watch all the time. College football is back, if you like that as well. So I was happy. I did take most of the night game off on Sunday night because I felt like I was burning out. But we'll keep going forward. In the future, we'll have some locks of the weeks and some picks for you. Let's ease into it, you know?
All right, just one prediction. Jets, Patriots this week.
Oh, come on. The Jets. The Jets ain't never going to win a damn football game, Rob. You know that.
Just so you know, we're recording this on a Saturday night,
Eastern
time, September 18th, 2021. It's 6:43 p.m. Eastern time.
Mark the time the Jets already lost.
They already lost.
They're already.
Speaking of New York, Nick, let's talk about wine and cheese.
Wine and cheese. Here we go. Food segment. Play that music.
What do we got for the food segment this week, Rob?
Okay.
What's cooking, good looking?
Eggplant pop.
Cheese or cookies?
Nothing for you.
You are about to be crushed by a giant corn.
Tina, come get some ham.
It's made with bits of real panther, so you know it's good.
A café.
All right, we're going to rush through the food segment on this episode, but what I'd like to say, if you are going to drink wine and cheese together, there are a few rules that will make this easy for you, right? First, I want you to start with the wines that you like, okay? Find a wine that you like. Don't go too foo-foo. Don't walk around total wine for hours and hours listening to everybody's suggestions. If you like something already, start there, then work your way to the cheese. With cheese, you want to consider the age of the cheese, the type of the cheese, the intensity, and then pair correctly. So you tell me, Rob, what are some of your favorites on the wine and cheese categories?
Okay, well, I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to pair up certain cheeses with certain wines.
I think by type. I mean, if we give like specific bottles, we're getting kind of in the weeds. Keep it kind of vague.
No, I'm going to go with the type of the wine and the cheese.
Yeah, now, we'll give you the type. You choose your favorite. Let me start because I think you might like this one. I went out west when I was waiting tables and a bartender. I started getting into Sangiovese's. Now, I like Italian food a lot, so Sangiovese's in the sort of Chianti dry side family, but it's
a census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Exactly right. But Sangiovese is excellent with Italian food, and specifically with Parmesan cheese and Sangiovese is excellent together. It is always good. Now, yes, you can do Chianti as well, but Sangiovese, for those folks that don't like super, super dry, it's a slightly less dry version of Chianti almost, more friendly with marinara sauces, pastas, etc. And it's so good with even just fresh Parmesan, just the wine and the Parmesan itself.
I'm going to give you a little amuse-bouche to go with the specific wine.
Here we go.
Now, a Robbiolo cheese. Have you ever had a Robbiolo cheese?
I believe I have, yes.
Okay. Very soft and creamy. It's an Italian cheese, obviously.
Yeah. It's like a brie-ish almost.
Right.
Consistency, so, I suppose.
What I like to do is I like to get a crostini and I take a little bit of the Robbiolo cheese and put it on the crostini.
This is when you're getting your toes done, correct?
Exactly. When I'm getting my toes done.
Okay. Then, someone's serving you.
Yeah.
This is Mark Sanchez serving you, I take it?
Mark Sanchez. He hasn't been doing
anything.
Make sure
you tip your waiter.
So Robbiolo cheese on a crostini with a grilled peach. Okay.
Oh, I like that.
So a grilled peach and then a little balsamic drizzle on top of that.
Oh, now you're talking. Yeah.
Now that paired with a Pinot Grigio is a perfect like cheese and wine treat. Works perfectly well.
One of the things that I've seen at doing some of these wine tastings over the years is that oftentimes people make the mistake when they order a cheese plate at a wine bar, for example, they have the soft cheeses like the Brie's, etc. And then they have the harder ones, the aged cheddars, the Parmesans, etc. They really don't go together. The softer side generally leans toward the whites and the harder side generally leans to your reds. And you kind of want to stay in that zone. You know, if you can't dance, don't go too crazy. You know what I'm saying? So start easy. I drink Cabernet more than just about anything else. More so.
Life is a Cabernet, old chum.
I like my cheddar like I like my K-bars, and that is super, super sharp. So if you are into the sharp cheddars, I'm telling you right now, the wine to pair with extra sharp cheddar, bold cheddar, certainly any aged cheddar that you like, the fancy stuff, is Cabernet. So if you are a Cabernet drinker, you want to stay in the cheddar family for the most part there. So Cabernet, aged cheddars, sharp cheddars. That's another one for you.
Halloumi cheese, delicious, perfect with Zinfandel.
Nice Sauvignon Blanc with goat cheese, perfect pairing.
That sounds delicious.
Good morning.
Morning, sir. Welcome to the National Cheese Emporium.
Thank you, my good man.
What can I do for you, sir?
I have another one here. This is a Trader Joe's special, but I believe you can get it in other places. It's called the lemon ricotta cheese.
It sounds good.
Dessert cheese, actually.
Like a curd.
It. Yeah, it's almost cheesecakey consistency, but it's also cut like a brie. But it's lemon ricotta. Now, what I like to do with this is I would make a cheese sauce out of the lemon ricotta cheese and toss it with some pasta.
Oh, I like that. That sounds
good. Maybe a tagliatelle or
you're doing like a lasagna pasta hybrid almost or something.
Yeah, or a pappardelle or anything like that.
Yeah, very nice.
Now, this one goes with a Chilean type of Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
You get the lemon, the tartness of the lemon working with the Sauvignon Blanc. Now, if you don't want to get the Sauvignon Blanc a Chilean style, you can go with a Californian Pinot Noir.
Because Pinot is a softer red. Anytime that I'm drinking scotch for a while and I don't have wine for a little bit, I ease back into wine with Pinots before I hit Cabernets.
I'm going to end with your favorite word to say.
I wasn't going to say it because I knew you'd make fun of me.
Manchego cheese.
Manchego. It's my favorite fucking cheese. Manchego off the top rope.
It is a great cheese. I like to use this in mac and cheese. One of the 12 cheeses I'll use in a mac and cheese.
It's part of multiple recipes, but I actually also put it in salad. It's a very hard cheese, but you can almost treat it like a Parmesan if you want to shred it. I cut it into little squares and put it in my salad. Oftentimes, I'll do it the same way in my mac and cheese, melt it down because it melts hard because it's such a hard cheese.
You have to grate it in. It's basically for the nuttiness of it that you're trying to get in your mac and cheese.
It's an explosion of flavor in your mouth. There's rare cheeses that have this sort of intensity of flavor. But I think you got to pair it with a red, right, Rob? What are you going to pair it with?
This is going to go with two different types of wine.
Okay.
A red Rioja.
Interesting. Okay. I can see that.
Now, the Rioja wine is like a plum, dark berries.
Dark tannins. Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
It's like a tobacco
undertone. That's the one where if you shake the glass up, you're going to see the little lines of the wine bleeding down the glass there. Yep. It's very heavy that way.
So that goes with perfectly with that, but there's another kind of wine you can have it with. It's a cava, you know, a sparkling rosé.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say for the ladies, just to close out, because I do like Brie, and I don't think I like Brie till I was older. Brie is really for your sparklings. As you mentioned, Moscatos could work, but if you like a bubbly Chardonnay, or if you want to drink champagne, if you're doing the morning mimosas and stuff, that's the time to have Brie. That's a perfect pairing there.
I am drinking a bloody orange wheat beer right now from Jack's Abbey, and it is absolutely delicious.
You know what I would have with a bloody beer like that? I would have a smoked Gouda. That's what I would do there.
I love smoked Gouda, especially in a burger.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Thin slice it, melt it on top of that burger.
So, Nick, we're running a little late in this. I mean, this is a great segment.
Oh, we'll have a part two. No question about it. I mean, again, you want to ease into it. Don't overspend on fancy wine. Don't go out there buying cake bread and silver oak. You want to learn what you like first. As you learn what you like, now you're in the right family. Now get the more expensive cab if cab is what you like.
Pair it with American cheese.
What would you pair with a Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, Rob? I'm just curious.
A Whiskey Tango Foxtrot would go with a nice steak with some Gorgonzola cheese on it.
Yeah, Gorgonzola. Yeah, I think I was going to go the same way. Yeah, I think that's right.
Check out the website for that recipe.
All right, Rob, you got any recommendations? What do you got?
I do. I've been watching on the Vice Network their documentaries, The Dark Side. Obviously, you know I watched The Dark Side of the Ring, about all the tragedy in professional wrestling.
Yep,
you know.
I've got that on my DVR. I've got Heels. I know you're going to yell at me about that as well.
You'll want to watch Heels, but you'll want to watch it over the course of 3 or 4 days.
Gotcha.
Because it is very intense. But on the Vice Network, they have another Dark Side. Dark Side of the 90s. The decade that we pretty much all have grown up in.
Blowjob in the Oval Office? What are we talking about?
Oh, that everything is in this. The Dark Side of the 90s features the Beanie Baby craze and the downfall.
The Beanie Baby is part of the Dark Side?
Yes, it is. The upside and the downfall of the dot-com craze. 90s TV, the crappy shows, the good shows. Dark Side of the 90s, it's like 9 episodes of this. Obviously, one for each year in the 90s.
I would be interested in watching that for sure. These nostalgia trip docuseries are infectious. And my recommendation is close to that as well. I know mentioning it is sort of heartbreaking because so much of our audience is Massachusetts, New England. So it's tough to bring this up. My earliest sports memories are of this moment, which is the 86 World Series. The documentary series on ESPN, Once Upon a Time in Queens, produced by Jimmy Kimmel. They really get some fun people to do interviews there. Bill Burr shows up. He's hilarious. Obviously, all the Mets are there. Lenny Dykstra. It's hard to watch, but he does steal the show. Look, I hate watching those highlights and obviously the Buckner moment, but that is an interesting time. That is a really interesting World Series. And aside from the heartbreak of the Red Sox there, who broke the curse, and it's really said and done now anyway, it's a timestamp for the 80s in New York and what it was like there, which was crazy. Reagan, capitalism, stock market. It. Just a nutty time. I prefer my Keith Hernandez on Seinfeld, but he's really great in this docuseries, Once Upon a Time in Queens. Make sure you check it out. 4 parts, each one's an hour. Well worth the watch on ESPN.
Yeah, but you know what you say here in New England? Who gives a shit? We won.
It's fucking out of here.
I have a plug. I need to get this plug in because I'm a happy man again. My good buddy George, who was my dealer before. Now you're thinking, dealer? What kind of dealer?
Yeah, what kind of dealer?
He was my baseball card dealer for the longest time. Great guy. He went off on a few other ventures, opened up a couple of bar rooms, sold the Very bar nice. Rooms. He has now reopened up his own store again for sports cards. George Peps in Quincy, Mass. And I'll have it on the website. I'll have a link to his website. If you guys are looking to buy cards, this is the guy to go to. We're talking across the country, too. This is the guy to go to.
Wow. Nice. That's awesome. Shouts to George. And if I'm ever in Quincy, I'll be sure to check it out.
You should. You'll probably be coming with me.
I need a Mac Jones. I need a Jalen Waddle. So I got a list of things I need.
Once again, folks, if you want to check out our website and see how well Nick has done with his predictions in baseball, you want to read a Julian Edelman article, you want to see his sports cards, go to www.nickandrobe2w.com. If you want to check us out on Twitter, you want to drop us a tweet, you want to read our tweets, whatever, hook us up, follow us. It is at nickandrobe2w.
Twitter.
And if you want to drop us an email, which is where we love you to send us the love letters, it is at eastwestwithnickandrobe@gmail.com.
eastwestwithnickandrobe@gmail.com.
It's been great. It's been fun.
At RealWatch, RealWatchability.com, football picks upcoming, locks of the week coming. I don't care for sex. I find it an embarrassing, dull exercise. I prefer sports where you can win. Norm MacDonald. Peace. Peace out.
Peace.
I'll tell you this.
What's that, Norm?
My doctor told me I'm on the same dose that they give to the donkey for the second show in Tijuana.
Okay, now listen.